Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggin Show by Eurosport, the home of cycling, brought to you by Zwift, where fun is fast. I'm Graham Wilgos. Brad, we're back into it.
We are.
Stage two of the Giro today.
And we've got the King Kelly with us, Sean Kelly. Good to have you on, Sean.
Thank you.
How many Giros did you ride?
Started one, did a week of the race, and then packed my bag.
You ever won a stage, did you, a Giro?
No, never won a stage. No, it's a race I would have loved to have done when I was in my good years, but of course, with commitments to the Spanish team and Spanish sponsors, they always had to do Vuelta. So, unfortunately, never got the opportunity when I felt that I could do something in Giro to ride.
Important one, actually, Sean, because Brian mentioned this on commentary earlier, and he didn't get it quite right. So you rode the Giro when, as you say, at the time, the Vuelta would have been the significant one for you because you were with the Spanish team, and so that was the race that they were interested in you taking part in. Brian said that something along the lines of, on commentary of, you were offered a particular contract if you went to the Giro, but what was actually the case was the team were given a wild card on the condition that you turned up as one of their, well, as their star man.
Yes, well, you know, back in the day, the organisers had a lot of control over the teams they invited, and if they weren't sending a good team, well, then they might not accept the team. And that was the case with the Giro. If I wasn't in the Festina team, they wouldn't be prepared to take the team on the start. So I had an agreement with the Festina bosses that I would go for a week of racing and then leave the rest. But there was no question of getting a contract or an appearance fee. It was just that they wanted the team there. Festina wanted a team in the Giro on that year.
1992. It was?
Yes.
Do you know what the team was, Graham?
What, Festina?
No, it was Lotus.
Was it?
Well, it was Lotus in Spain. Outside of Spain, it was Festina.
Yeah.
I see. Very good, Brad.
Yeah. And it was when the Vuelta was in April then, wasn't it, as well?
Yes.
So well, you had April, Vuelta, May, June, the Giro, and then the Tour. So guys that did the three tours then, like La Charreta and all those, they were hard men then to do all three grand tours. There was, I think back then it was about a week or two between the Vuelta and the Giro, was there? Something like that?
Yeah, I think about 2 weeks between Vuelta and Giro. So it was, yes, it was a very little time, but there was very few riders, of course. La Charreta was one of the ones who did it a number of times.
And you just won San Remo. And Pro Cycling Stats as well, this might not be correct, Pro Cycling Stats says that you got as far as stage 16. I mean, you were almost there. Was that not the case? It's just the week?
No, I did go on further. The plan was with the team to go for a week racing, but then when they had me there, they said, oh, yeah, continue on a bit more. And the sponsor, the Festina boss in Italy, he was, you know, pushing to continue on. And eventually, yes, I ended up doing a lot more than I had bargained for.
And in all your time racing, having spoken to you briefly about this earlier, I don't think you've ever had a worse injury than what you're currently recovering from.
Yes, well, it was back in December, mid-December. I was out mountain bike with 8 of my friends who I, you know, bike with quite a lot, and we were in the woods on quite a good road. We just got tangled together, and I went over the bars and broke my left collarbone for the second time, 7 ribs and a punctured lung. So it was one of the worst crash that I had. I did break the collarbone and ribs before when I was racing. But of course, now I'm much older, so it's more painful and it takes longer to recover from.
Excruciating. And apparently you needed a stepladder to get back on the turbo trainer. You wouldn't be stopped from getting back on the turbo.
Well, that'd be nothing new to the pro bike riders, because, you know, when you break a collarbone, you want to get back maybe 4 or 5 weeks. But just to get up on the bike, get your leg over, especially if you have broken ribs, it can be very painful. But when you're up on the bike, you know, you can just sit there and pedal away for, you know, 45 minutes, an hour. And it's important that you get back as quickly as possible. But I was back, I think, about 5 or 6 weeks after the accident. But, you know, nowadays we can, you know, we see the guys 2-3 weeks after breaking a collarbone, they're back on the turbo trainers in their garage.
I love how when you were texting back and forth with Podcast Pete, our producer, you only dropped it in at the end, having gone through all the, yeah, looking forward to getting back into it. How are you? I'm well. How's your off season, etc. Sean Kelly is a legendarily hard man, but this is above and beyond. Oh yeah, by the way, I've punctured a lung, broken 7 ribs.
Well, yeah, so it's something where, yeah, when you talk to people, you don't say, well, I'm after having a bad accent. It's not something that I like to talk about or advertise or whatever you like to word it. But yeah, I think, you know, there was events coming up and there was talk about, you know, doing the events. And I just said, well, I don't think I'll be doing those events because I've, you know, had a fall from my bike and I'll be out for a number of weeks. And yeah, end of story.
Well, it's good to have you back. Good to see you well. Brad, we're keen particularly to have Sean on today after the news about Ireland's new favourite cycling son, Sam Bennett.
Yeah.
So Patrick Lefevre, Deceuninck Quickstep boss, has said he's kicked off transfer season early, not supposed to until sort of August 1st, revealing that Bennett will leave Deceuninck Quickstep at the end of this season. His team once again changing their lead sprinter, seemingly opting not to match the significant offers from rival teams. So we think he's off to Bora again.
God, yeah.
Which again...
I don't know whether it didn't seem that ended on a very good note, did it, when he left Bora the last time? But Patrick, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know the ins and outs of it, but I mean, he's saying Remco and Julian Alaphilippe are his highest priorities, you know, in terms of finance. And you can imagine that with Julian Alaphilippe. Yes, Remco is a young super talent and a one for the future, but Sam is the fastest man in the world at the moment. He's a green jersey winning the Tour de France stage winner. He's won stages this year in races. It just seems strange to not cover all your bases, really. I mean, Sam is a superstar of the sport, and to come out now, the second stage of the Giro, and already, you know, say that he's going to be leaving at the end of the season, and whether it must be a finance thing, but, you know, it looked like he'd found his home for the first time in a while, Sam, and was happy, and particularly with Cav there this year, and, you know, Cav and him, we were talking about it only yesterday, weren't we, at the Tour, and you can only imagine that the role Cav could play for Sam at the Tour. But what do you make of it all, Sean?
Well, it's something, you know, that we know Patrick Lefevre. He doesn't, you know, pay these big salaries. He talk a lot about he had the budget. He doesn't have got the money. Of recent, he's been talking that he has a new sponsor coming on board. But Alaphilippe and Evenepoel, of course, you know, he's re-signed them. Don't know exactly, you know, what their contracts are. So I think the Belgians and Patrick Lefevre more so are known. You know, he's never paid big money. If you look back with the sprinters he's had, you know, he take them on, they're very successful, and then they move on because they get much bigger offers. So reading between the lines, I think, you know, Sam, he has much better offers elsewhere, and Patrick Lefevre doesn't seem to be able to match it or prepared, you know, to pay that amount. But it's amazing that we're talking so early about it already. But yeah, I think it's something, it's always been going on in the background. We know the regulations is not until, I think, the 1st of August where they can announce. But, you know, the negotiations are going on well before the Tour de France, and we just don't hear about them. But this is certainly, you know, big news with Sam Bennett, because the way he's riding this year and last year's performances, it's a major one. And it'll be interesting to see if he goes back to Bora, if that is the case. I'm not sure where he's going to go, but I'm sure there's a number of teams that are very interested in Sam's services, because, you know, he's proven that now again this year he's the fastest in the world and he's become consistent.
Are we looking at the Tour de France, not necessarily this summer, but next year, as all in for Julian Alaphilippe then? Is that the plan that Deceuninck are looking ahead for? They're focusing on the classics, and then they're looking at the Tour all in for Alaphilippe, as opposed to a few eggs in Sam Bennett's basket, or a few eggs in their sprinter's basket, and a few eggs in Alaphilippe's basket.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know whether Julian will ever win the Tour, you know, and it's sort of, you have to play those two cards when they get to the Tour, because he's French, and, you know, Sam should get the backing this year, really, for the green jersey again. You know, he proved himself outright last year, won Champs-Élysées and, of course, another stage. And Julian's always going to win stages and light the race up and be, you know, kind of bring that publicity to the team because of his personality. But it's a tough one, isn't it? It really is. And, you know, Julian's the world champion as well. He's going to be riding the Tour de France as world champion. And
Brian said on comms, Lefevre would be an idiot not to take Bennett to the Tour this year.
Yeah. Yeah,
I agree. We all agree. I think there.
And I'd take Cav as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think there's. I cannot see that happening. That he's not going to take Sam Bennett to the Tour this year. if he's leaving the team, as we are, you know, believed, led to believe at this moment, I think, you know, he's definitely going to take Sam and, you know, get the value out of him. It's going to be an interesting one. With Alaphilippe, of course, yeah, will he be able to win the Tour? I don't think it's going to be for this year. But, you know, looking further, I suppose, with Evenepoel, I think it's going to be an interesting one, how he fare out in this Giro. And of course, the Tour of France next year is going to be something that, you know, maybe he can target with Remco Evenepoel.
Bennett's a Bora. Can we see Sagan going the other way? Sagan to Decani, well, Quickstep. It was mentioned earlier in the season.
Was it? Yeah, but financially as well. If we look at,
can he afford him?
Talking about whether he can. I mean, they're talking about that he's on nearly €7 million, isn't he, at Bora? I don't think Patrick can afford that.
Well, I think with Sagan, there's a relationship between Specialized and Sagan.
There
I
is
think,
definitely,
I think they, you know,
they may could, pay his wages, eh?
Yeah, I think there maybe there's an ongoing personal contract there, so that would it would suit, and you could see why he might go to.
I think he'd do well there. I think that'd be a good team for him under Patrick. I could see him coming back to the fore in the classics and being being the Sagan he was a few years ago.
Interesting quote from Lefebvre as well, just to add a final point on this. He says, at a certain point, I can no longer be convinced I have to flip the switch. These types of riders leaving is a fact of life. As pros, they have to earn as much money as possible. Yeah. But look at the sprinters who left us. Some riders came walking back.
Yeah.
So he doesn't see it as final, never sees it as final, but then he says he can never go back.
And he means
that,
means that as captain for Mark, does he? He's insinuating Mark there.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I mean, he's right in a way. You know, riders, you know, have to look after themselves, don't they? And earn as much money as they can. But he's having a dig there at the same time.
Yeah. He always feels like he is.
Yes. Well, it's going to be a concerning one for Sam Bennett, because he's definitely going to be looking, you know, in the past. And when you look at Viviani, you look at Gaviria, the way those guys were performing, and when they moved on, you know, they didn't produce the performances that they were able to do with Tacone Quickstep. So I presume Sam is, you know, looking at that also. You know, I think Sam would definitely, you know, love to stay with Tacone Quickstep, because, you know, he's really fitted in there well, and he's happy there. But yeah, it's the financial situation, and if the difference is, you know, major between what he's been offered and what he can get with Tacone Quickstep, then you can understand why that there is the reason that he can be moving, that he will be moving on.
João Almeida, Lefebvre has said, also off at the end of this season, which seems like strange timing given that stage two of the Giro today, Almeida joint leader with Remco Evenepoel for Decanic. Evenepoel took bonus seconds to go level with Almeida today, the only significant change on GC. Mm. Where does that fit in? Why announce it today?
I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, as Sean said, negotiations tend to start around this time. And if he's got an agent, he's got a football agent, isn't he? Same agent as Ronaldo.
Jorge Mendes.
Yeah.
Same agent for Ronaldo and Mourinho. Yeah. And renowned for being absolutely ruthless.
And he's come wading in and obviously wants money now and wants some sign, you know, with all these talks of Sagan maybe coming to the team and this, that and the other, he probably has to get in early now and say, well, what about my guy next year? It starts earlier and earlier. And, you know, off the back of that with the discussions about Bennett and potentially Sagan coming to that team, you know, the agents step straight in for other riders that are up at contract and say, well, if this is going on, what about our guy? You know, and they will start looking elsewhere, because the later you leave it in the year as well, less people have money. So as Sean said, the negotiations start earlier and earlier.
When you both knew that you were hot property, so to speak, and you thought, okay, I can make the most of this here. Brad, for example, going from Jonathan Vorster's team to Team Sky,
well, that
2009
was, yeah,
to 2010.
That started at the Tour de France. I mean, that started early in the year, actually. And it was all under the radar. I had to meet Dave Brailsford at a supermarket on the rest day of the Tour de France. And that was all secret, you know. It was, unless you get in the door early and start, you know, things, August is late when people start. We saw that last year, weren't we around last year with the Giro and that, when it was late in the year and people were scouting around for contracts, and it gets, you want it for your security and your peace of mind so you can concentrate on your bike riding. Contract things are the worst things to be going on, aren't they?
Yes, well, I don't think, something you want to have, you know, lingering out there. Of course, with Almeida, if he's made an agreement and it's been announced now, you know, that's not a problem. He knows where he's going. But if you have to wait until August, and you know, you're still negotiating. Well, then, you know, the opportunities are much less, and you know, the amount of money available is also less. But the surprising one is it's Patrick Lefebvre who announced it today. I think he just wanted to get one up on some of the other maybe the managers, that they were not going to be the first ones to announce it, because it is very early to be throwing it out there. But Patrick Lefebvre did say also, I don't care who win the Giro. I don't care what flag he is carrying, what nationality. The moment he's carrying the colours of my team, that's all that matters.
Interesting quote on Jorge Mendes' involvement in cycling from Mark Madio. He says, I do not want to talk about the football system. The system of football agents, it is what? It is to have a wallet of players and to move them as much as possible, to extract cash as often as possible. It is a world of speculation in a financial bubble. And where is football with this financial bubble, with everything that is happening now with COVID? What is going on there? They are on the edge of an abyss. And now we want to let people like Mendes into cycling? I don't want Mendes in cycling. He should stay in Portugal with the football people, but he should not come and join us. He is not going to earn in cycling what he earns in football.
Yeah, well, that's true to a degree. You know, cycling is a small world, you know, and you have to... What goes around comes around in cycling. And look at Mark Cavendish, you know, he's gone back to Quickstep now. You know, he's kept a good relationship with Patrick Lefebvre. And when it was looking like Mark didn't have a team at the end of last year, Patrick stepped in and gave him a spot. You know, it's you reap what you sow in cycling. And you've got to keep good relationships, because you never know where someone's going to end up. You know, one minute they could be a team manager or director sportif or a mechanic at a team. The next minute they could be a DS at another team. Or next day they could be a president of UCI Cycling. You just don't know, do you?
No.
It's a small world, cycling.
Yes, and you can understand where Mark Madio is coming from, because these big agencies involved in football, they're going to be talking big money. And of course, you know, Mark Madio, he's been around a long time. He's also, you know, a very good dealer and negotiator when it comes to, you know, signing riders. So it's understandable why he doesn't want those agencies coming in, because they are going to, you know, really push up the prices, and they're going to be talking about international telephone numbers when they're, you know, when they're trying to get a contract for the riders.
Italian lira.
So yeah, it's the same situation with Patrick Lefebvre. You know, he is not happy with those agencies coming in and, you know, taking over riders and negotiating for riders.
Brad, are we in favour of football agents in cycling?
As long as they can recalibrate to what the numbers we're talking about. Yeah, I mean, I think agents weren't so much around when you were racing, were they, Sean? As much as every rider has an agent now. A lot of riders used to do their contracts themselves. There was many years I did my own contract. It was only about 10, 15 years ago where every rider now has an agent within the peloton. And those agents, you know, I think there was the Belgium guys, Paul de Gator, I think he was called. He had, at one point, this was about 15 years ago, had about 50 riders. I don't know how many he's got now. So you can imagine the contracts scrabbling around. He's trying to service every rider. And as you say, the numbers that they talk about, I think there's nothing that really qualifies you to be a cycling agent, though. You see, this is the thing. Nothing really qualifies you to be a football agent. It's just a bit of a jack the lad sort of thing, isn't it, really? And I think it's a way of the riders not having to think about the money, and someone having the cheek to ask for more money than you would if you're not sort of driven by money.
Yeah, that's all you need, I think, cheek.
Yes, and I think, as Brad says,
a little bit.
In the earlier days, you know, I was negotiating my contract myself. But then in the last maybe eight or 10 years, I had a manager who did that. And it does make it easier for the rider, because, you know, they go and they just talk to the team owners, the team manager, or whoever they need to negotiate with, and they can talk quite big figures. And for the athlete itself, it's difficult to do that.
Yeah.
I felt that as well when I was in there. It was always difficult. But, you know, these guys, they just throw a sum out there, and, you know, they don't have, you know, any worries, and they just don't think about it.
No clandestine meetings in supermarket car parks for you, Sean?
Just lots of brown paper bags, weren't they, under the table with Spanish pesetas in?
Well, as you said, Brad, you know, there was a lot of times during the Tour of France when there would be teams, yeah, they would be talking to you, and you would try, you know, maybe slip out and go to maybe a cafe someplace on the corner and, you know, have a coffee and talk to them. So, yeah, it was something that, you know, it went on, but it wasn't good for you during the Tour, because it does take from your, you know, your focus on the event.
Okay, well, we'll watch with interest to see how the Evenepoel and Almeida two-card play from De Koenig develops. As I say, Evenepoel moving up on GC is today's only significant development overall. 179 kilometres from Stupigny to Novara, ending with a sprint finish that was worth the wait. Here's how Rob Hatch called it for us on Eurosport and GCN+.
550 metres to go now, and you've got to be up the front. Here's Simone Consonni giving his all, giving his best for Elia Viviani, who waits. Viviani sat on the wheel, and Viviani is there looking behind Molano now. Molano's going to have a go. Richiesi is back, and Richiesi is waiting for Gaviria. Gaviria, who is following Medlier. Here goes Medlier through the centre. Tim Medlier going to the line. Tim Medlier still in front. Medlier, Nizzolo, Groenewegen. It's still Medlier, though. It's still Medlier. Medlier all the way. Oh, and he's done it at a canter. Tim Medlier wins on debut, and Alpecin Fenix up there with the very best.
So, Brad, Tim Merlier, not necessarily the favourite today.
No.
However, he has had a form season so far. The last rider to win in Navarra, Eddy Merckx, Tim Merlier, former Belgian champion.
I watched the sprint he won, which was the Driedaagse van de Panne, which is now that classic, the De Panne Coxeter Classic, whatever it's. And the sprint he did there was kind of like in three parts, led out from the front, and he's super quick, and he's got length in his sprint as well.
He went long, yeah.
He's got real length in his sprint. Dan Lloyd tipped him today. My tip was Gaviria, actually, and he looked like, because it was on that sweeping bed, he did try and come up the inside. If he'd had a straight run, he would have been top three, Gaviria, which is a good return for him, seeing as the form he's had. But Groenewegen as well, wasn't he fourth today?
Fourth today, and seemed to be looking around him just before he crossed the line.
So yeah, you think he was running out of legs, wasn't he?
Yeah. And then he sort of went again. He went again. Yeah, so Viviani pipped Groenewegen to third, Giacomo Nizzolo second, Peter Sagan fifth, Ewan finished 10th. Favourite for today for most
really
people.
They really got it wrong, didn't they, Sean?
Yes, I think Ewan was way too far off, and he was coming, and then he knocked off his efforts quite a bit from the line because he knew he wasn't going to get on the podium. But yeah, Tim Merlier, I think, he's done it a number of times already this year, Torino, Adriatico. When he takes it up onto the on the front, he can go there from that 200 plus metres, and he is... he's a big, powerful sprinter, and he can hold it all the way. And again today, he did exactly the same. And, positioning as well, he did it perfectly because he was in the wheel of Viviani and he was being, led out. So, yeah, he has the feel, he has the eye for it, and he has the power. So if you've got all of that ingredients, well, then you're going to win big sprints. And, today, he was always, one of the top favourites.
I'll tell you who else picked him for today, if you remember back to the end of yesterday's pod. Me,
you did, yeah. Well done,
just had to get that in there. Yeah, well, it's not often I get
a
little success
you,
like
Graham,
that,
to
celebrate. It was a sketchy finish, though, Sean. You talked about how important the positioning was. Sketchy old finish going into today. A lot of twists, and it wasn't a straight sprint in the end.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't exactly straight. And when you look at the road book, it looked like it was a bit more. Have a straight run in, but there were a number of roundabouts. But again, if you had the team around you there, if you had two riders or three riders around you, then you keep your position. And that's exactly what Merlier did. He just, kept a good position. At the right time, they were able to, move him up and set him on a wheel in that, top three, four places. And then, it's just, it's down to if you've got it in the end. And he had it today. And, he just, again... timing to take up his sprint at the perfect time, and he did it once again and got his, a fabulous stage victory.
Brad, you mentioned Fernando Gaviria, his own UAE teammate put him into the barrier there.
Well, I don't think it was his fault, though. I think it was more Gaviria's fault because he was on Melier's wheel, wasn't he, just as the jump happened. And whether he didn't really have the surge or speed to go with him and then get over the top of Melier, he decided to go on the inside. But then, to be fair to Gaviria, it's... sometimes that risk pays off, and that's the shortest line because of the bend it was on. And had the gap stayed open for him and he'd gone through there, he was giving himself the best chance with perhaps not the best form. So, that's the split decisions you have to make as a sprinter at those speeds, and the instinct you have to have, and you can't account for what someone else is going to move, split decision. You've just got to do it. And one day it'll pay off, and that's how he'd have won the race. He wouldn't have had the legs potentially today to go on the wheel of Melier, then over the top of him with a long way round. And he decided to go for the short line, and it didn't pay off for him today. And he did well to stay upright.
Will Dylan Groenewegen be happy with how he looked happy finished. Afterwards.
Yeah, in the interview. Yeah, I think that's a big monkey off his back that today. All eyes were on him. 9 months away from the sport, he looked relieved. I think he was just pleased to be there, and I think you know he didn't have the legs to come over the top of those guys. But that's not bad, is it? In a bunch kick like that for 9 months away.
No, I think he had an excellent finish today. You know, to be up there on the in the final run to the line after being out for so long. Also, you know, when you come back after, you know, what he's been through with that big crash in Poland last year, you're always a little bit nervous as well that you have to make a move because somebody in front of you makes a sudden or a brisk movement and you have to do it as well. And that's certainly what you'd be thinking. And Groenewegen would be saying, well, I don't want to make a move here. I have to make a sudden move out from left to right because, you know, first time back, there was, you know, all eyes were on him. And to finish there today in the, you know, the top places after being out for that time, I think it's a real good performance.
Sagan elbows out as well today.
Yeah. Sagan was throwing bombs, wasn't he? Kane half out. So yeah, he had Marcus Burgart with him. I think Sagan will win tomorrow. He's my tip for tomorrow.
Stage really suits him, doesn't it?
I mean, and he's you know, he was up there in San Remo. He's not been the Sagan of, we haven't seen the consistent Sagan of a couple of years ago for a while, but when he does turn it on, he looked aggressive today and he looked like he wanted it. And I think when he turns it on, like last year, that stage he did last year, he's still one of the best riders in the world.
Yeah, I think tomorrow's stage, you've got five climbs that are all bunched together towards the end.
Yeah.
And if it was later in the race, you might say it was a typical breakaway stage. But tomorrow, like you say, Bora look hungry. It looks perfectly set up for Sagan, but I think he enjoys it.
This will really set him up for the Tour as well. I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with at the Tour.
Dylan Groenewegen, can he win a stage? Will he win a stage over the next 3 weeks?
He's got to get through the race, isn't he, Sean? After 9 months away, coming back to the Giro and getting through the race, you know, as hard as it is at times, it's going to be tough for him, isn't it?
Yes, well, for anybody who've been out for, you know, quite a long time, it always gets more difficult as you go into the race. That is the concern. You know, the first days you can do that because you have a lot of energy, but then fatigue start hitting you and then it gets difficult. And, you know, some riders can manage that quite well. And that is a case for, you know, a few of the riders in the race. Evenepoel as well, of course. You know, he's another one who's been out. But, it's going to be an interesting one. Sagan, you know, he's hungry, I think. We all know, you know, where he's going next year. There's a little bit of doubt over that. So he wants to prove that, you know, he's still capable of winning stages in a big 3 week tour. So I think that will give him, you know, that bit more hunger again. And, you know, let's not forget he had a difficult beginning of the season. He was out with COVID. He was off the bike, I think, for 2 weeks at, you know, a vital time. And he's been coming in the last number of weeks. He's just getting better. So I think, yeah, there's a lot more to come from Sagan in this Giro.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Brad. We'll be back with more from the Bradley Wiggins Show after this. Zwift is the world's training playground, Brad, where fun takes you further, recreating the outdoor feel of riding on an indoor trainer. Something you can get on board with, I think.
It does, yeah. And Zwift have done it very well. And they're now the leaders, aren't they, in that world? And they've got the likes of Geraint Thomas on board. And, you know, probably can't get...
Your old mate, yeah.
Yeah, and it's... You know, they did some involvement with Team Wiggins a few years ago. We joined in one of their shops, Pinarello shop races one night, and my son uses it. I watch him during the winter months. It's something I wish I'd had when I was 15, definitely just to, from a safety point of view, when you didn't want to let your kids out on the road in the dark.
And anyone can use it. So, you don't have to be G, you don't have to be a pro. You can train with thousands of real people.
Yeah. Like, you can train with anyone. You can ride with anyone from the world of pro cycling or from your workplace or school, whatever age you are.
Brad, like you say, most of the pros on the World Tour train on Zwift.
Yeah, hop on anytime, heart pumping, intense cycling, join group rides, events and worldwide races.
Zwift has 9 worlds too, including the stunning Paris and France maps. They've recreated Tour de France stages, which gives everyone a chance to experience them. You don't have to have been Bradley Wiggins to experience what it's like to ride at the Tour de France. You can hit your kilometres with virtual dinosaurs, raging waterfalls. You can be inside a volcano, James Bond-esque, a wide open California desert. Plus, you can tour London landmarks.
All you need is a bike, trainer and Zwift app.
You can get a free 7-day trial, Brad. No strings attached at Zwift.com. Welcome back to the Bradley Wiggins Show, brought to you by Zwift, where fun is fast. Sean, Brad, the Volta Algarve, a race that has almost gone under the radar, given the excitement around the beginning of the Giro. Ethan Hayter, Team Ineos, 22 years old. It came down to the final kilometre of the final stage. We watched it just before we began recording earlier today. He was duking it out on the final climb with João Rodrigues for the race win. Brad, we were on the Ineos hype machine with Tom Pidcock yesterday and what the future might hold for him. They've got another star in the making here, with Ethan Hayter. It didn't quite happen for him today. He was pipped at the, pipped in the final kilometre.
But he's done this week already is superb, and all season really. He's another one really, you know, and we talk about Tom Pidcock all the time and the talent he has, but there's another one straight away behind him, and Ethan, you know, and good on him. Well done, Ethan.
Last year's Volta Algarve winner as well, Remco Evenepoel. So
Remco Evenepoel. They're all young guys as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, he almost did it, and were he to do it, he'd be following in some already pretty prestigious footsteps. I know we're waiting a lot on what might come from Evenepoel too. Sean, could he have done any more in that final climb?
No, I don't think he could have done any more. You know, he did a great ride in the race overall, and a great ride again today. But, you know, yesterday his crash, that was cost him. And we have seen him, you know, already this year. I think it was in the Gent or Nieuwsblad. In the final, he did crash a number of kilometres on the finish. So, you know, that has cost him in a number of races now. And I did see the crash yesterday. It was, you know, a mistake really with the way he, you know, came down in the corner. But that's, you know, part of the learning as well. When you're in a race like Algarve, you're race leader, you know, you're really up for it. You make those mistakes. So, you know, it's all about learning, you know, when to be, you know, to knock it off a bit. He's young. I think he's a good future ahead of him. But yeah, maybe if you do a bit of the cyclocross with Tom Pidcock in the winter, it would help his bike handling.
Yeah, help your technical skills slightly. I mean, he finished the stage with blood running down his left arm and leg, so it was quite a bang he took. So he did well to spring back up and give it all.
He took a real heavy one. You know, he could have done a lot of damage there. And yeah, I think today as well, you know, the effects of that crash as well, it probably, you know, did not help the situation. So yeah. You know, chapeau, a great ride, and I think, yeah, he's going to be a guy we're going to see a lot of in the future.
Not much older than him is Egan Bernal. So I'm just looking towards the rest of the week, Brad, before we're back next weekend, and where Bernal might feature, because we've got a couple of early days for the GC men.
Yeah.
So stage three, like we say, is made for Peter Sagan tomorrow, Monday, possibly one for the sprinters. Then stage four, Piacenza to Sestola. That's when the proper climbing begins. That's when we might start to see a few gaps on GC.
Yeah.
The final and toughest climbing test of the day, the Passerino, rising for 4 kilometres at 10%. Do we expect to see gaps on the GC in stage four?
I think, yeah, we'll see some gaps, but I don't think they're going to be decisive. I think it's the likes of Bernal, and that's this week three, you know, that third week's going to be brutal. And, you know, as we said with the Giro, the amount of times that riders have come back from deficits, like Nibali came back from 3.5 minutes a few years ago. We saw, of course, Chris Froome.
Yeah.
I mean, he came back from nearly 5 minutes, didn't he?
Who might be looking at this week and thinking, okay, I'm feeling good, and this is my time.
I think Simon Yates, to be honest. I think Simon races like that. Simon's an attacking rider, and he'll want to see these form early, and he won't be afraid to show himself early on.
Sean, stage five is another one for the sprinters, through Bologna and finishing in Cattolica. Merlier again?
Well, I think, he's going to be up for it because, you know, the pressure is off now, and, you know, he's proved to himself that he can win in, you know, in big company, and that's what he's done today. And, you know, when you get your first stage win in a big three-week tour, it relaxes everybody, and he knows that he is in a great position now to win more stages than he'll be going from. But yeah, there's other guys, you know, who are going to be also really hungry, because in this Giro, there's not a lot of opportunities for the sprinters. So they have to, you know, get up there and get their victories in the earlier part, because as the race go on, it's going to get more difficult.
Stage seven is another one for the sprinters. And then, Brad, we're back next weekend for two big mountain stages. Both kicking up above 3,000 metres.
Yeah, and ascents. I think that's where Bernal and those guys are going to come into their fore. You know, the high altitude days.
Talking of big mountains, what do you know about Charlie Gall?
Charlie. I got his pink jersey at home. EMI, you know, the famous road for a famous EMI. He rode for Faima, darling of Luxembourg. Yeah, he was...
Luxembourg climber.
Yeah. And there's a famous stage, I think it was 54, where he did this amazing sort of win over the... I forget which climb it was, but there was talk about him actually holding onto a car, and there's sort of great images at the top of him climbing over the snowdrifts at the top. Francesco Moser's older brother rode that year. And it's Charlie Gore, was it? Do you ever meet him? Did you ever meet Charlie Gore?
Yes, I met Charlie Gore.
I met him once.
Yes, yeah. I met him at receptions a number of times. And
did you race with him?
No, but I remember reading about him a lot. And you know,
read about him when he was younger, though, didn't you?
It wasn't really when I was younger. It was, you know, when I got into biking really, and when I became a pro, and then of course. You know, I had friends there living in Luxembourg, and I did hear stories about him from Acácio da Silva, the Portuguese rider who was with me for a number of years in different teams. And he talked about Charlie Gall, where he became a hermit and he went away living in a tent wood for a number of years, and he didn't want to talk, he didn't want to have any communication with anybody. A lot of the press tried to, you know, to talk to him, but he didn't want to do that, and he did that for quite a number of years.
Angel of the Mountains, he was known as.
Mm.
Well, you can hear more about Charlie Gall's story in Recycle Eurosport's podcast that retells the stories of the most compelling riders and races in cycling history. Look out for that one coming Thursday. Gall came from almost 17 minutes down going into the final mountain stage of the 1956 edition of the Giro, when conditions were so brutal that his rivals either gave up or hitched a lift to the summit. He braved blizzards and icy temperatures on Monte Bondone to take victory on stage 20 for the most unlikely victories and the Maglia Rossa. Brad, that brings us to the end of this episode of your show, The Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport.
Yeah, sponsored by Graham Wilgos.
Sean, pleased to hear you're back on the turbo. Yeah,
thank you, Sean.
And great to see you back on your feet. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, good to be back, and thank you.
We can follow you, Sean, if we want to, at...
At SeanKellyCycling.cc.
SeanKellyCC on the socials. Brad, we can follow you as ever.
There we go.
Plus, you can follow Eurosport on Twitter at Eurosport_UK. And you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks as ever to Podcast Pete, our producer, Pete Burton.
Podcast Pete.
Finally from me, Graham Wilgos, it's goodbye. If you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, share your thoughts and rate us. Plenty of action to look forward to coming up this week. Sean, you're back in the commentary booth.
Yes, back for the next 3 weeks.
Back for the next 3 weeks. We'll see you next weekend. Brad, you and me are back then. See you then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.